evening, everyone. It is now just 5 minutes after midnight on the Eastern Seaboard. It is the 9th of February. Welcome to episode 4 of Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Vlogcast that is going from a skeptical point of view to look over the biggest question, why? Because sometimes trying to figure out why is more impressive than finally getting to the answer of it all. Joining me this evening is going to be at least one person, not quite sure how many people, still waiting to find out what's going to happen with this. As I've said on many an occasion already, it's still kind of a work in progress. We shall see what happens. For the time being, however, joining me this evening is Witchy Bunny. Good evening, Witchy.
Good evening, Shijin.
Okay. And as said, this whole vlogcast was born partly out of spite, partly out of the Streisand effect. Because somebody finally told me one time, why would you go ahead and insert your scary logic over here on Facebook when all we want to do is just have fun? That's not the reason why people come over here to use Facebook. So why should you go ahead and do it? Completely missing the point of you're telling me that people don't want to use Facebook that way that I'm doing it, so I shouldn't use it the way that I want to do it. Real good. Anyway, tonight we're going to be talking about logic in a very simplistic fashion. Now, to be fair, I am not a college graduate. I did not take any philosophy courses. I did not take up anything in the line of debate classes. I have a cursory knowledge of logic at best. I'm not a debater. I am the person who, as I said earlier, just goes under the question of why and tries to explore through all that. My background is from a Roman Catholic perspective. However, currently I identify as an atheist on the simple question of where do I stand? And in my case, it comes down to a simple matter of the stuff that I was taught before doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense and hasn't for decades. Because of that, I don't see any reason to hold on to that until there is actual compelling evidence. And that's part of where this is going to all kind of come to. Witchy, your background?
I was pretty much raised a Jehovah's Witness. Left my teens. Currently, it went from that from that to Wicca and paganism in general. And right now, I'm kind of just unsure as to what's out there. You know, I don't know what's, if there is a God, if there isn't, if there is some sort of overarching spirit, I just don't know. So I'm here to find out and or at least discuss it.
Yeah. And that's where this whole thing comes to. We do not attack people. And to the best of my ability, I will ensure that nobody does that. And we will not attack ideas either. We will investigate them and we'll talk about them and we'll try to figure out what makes sense. But we will not be the scary, angry atheists that a lot of people try to paint atheists as, or even skeptical, critical thinkers. The whole point of it is, like I said, the journey sometimes is far more important and interesting than the destination when it's all over with. And that's part of what brings up tonight. As I said from the beginning, the part of the reason why this vlogcast started in the first place was partly a combination of the Streisand effect, which is the more you tell people don't talk about something, the more they're going to talk about it. And a little bit of spite, too. As I described, I had somebody who told me, why are you interfering with people who are posting on Facebook? Why don't you just take your scary logic elsewhere? When I was correcting stuff that they were posting that was factually wrong. And I could prove it with not even a two-minute search through Wikipedia and whatstheharm.net and Snopes. Yeah, by the way, Snopes, Witchy, I'm sure you've gone through it. Snopes is a wonderful location, isn't it?
It's great, and it's gotten to the point where I see the memes going around on Facebook, and the first thing I do is I go to Snopes, and as often happens, I usually end up throwing the Snopes link in there and going, check this first before you post. And people never do.
Yeah. The meme sending out, especially on Facebook, because Facebook tends to be where it happens far more often than anything else. Sending out copies of photos and news articles, and I'm using the inverted air quotes, although I'm not going to do it because I don't like doing that. News articles and bashing stuff. It is far too easy to send stuff around and say, look at this, this just proves how bad XYZ is, and without even bothering to take the 30 seconds to look around to find out, hey, is this actually real? Did it come from NPR? Did it come from BBC? Or did it come from The Onion? And not even looking for that. I mean, if you saw something from The Onion, you already know what The Onion is.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of you that may not necessarily be familiar, The Onion is an amazingly fun parody news site. The sad part of it is there have been occasions where parody from years past has actually come back and become news truth. And that's scary. So for those of you that are paying attention, by the way, if you would like to join us live during the shows, please, by all means, feel free. You can find the information on on YouTube. There we go. Find me under the name Shujin Tribble. Follow me on G+ under, again, the name Shujin Tribble. And if you have stuff, suggestions, topics that you'd like covered, again, email me, shujintribble@gmail.com. Well, it partly because I haven't taken the time to build a Facebook page or register a domain or set up a special email address, because perfectly honest, to use something that the Brits would say, I couldn't be arsed to do it right now. I just can't help it. But I will certainly see about that. If this becomes something worthwhile that's, you know, going to become, I will certainly see about that. But in the meantime, it's my personal thing, so it's under my personal stuff, which is okay. Like I said, I have gotten several emails already and several messages on G+ and comments on the videos. Those of you that have, thank you. I will be going through those and taking a lot more time to really think about them and see what we're going to tackle with all of that stuff in the future. I promise I will get to it. It's just a question mark of being able to get to it. Given ideas to how much behind schedule I am on stuff, I finally told my little one, you know what, we're officially into February now. The Christmas tree is going to have to come down.
Aw.
I know. But personally, in all seriousness, I wouldn't mind leaving it up. Because it's a fake tree, but it's colorful lights in the middle of what is still a very dark season. I don't know how many of you are, you know, dealing with the winter the way that we are here in the northeast corner of the United States. It's just been cold and vicious cold and dark. And I mean, dark and cold is one thing. I mean, that's kind of normal up this part. But as you've heard with the Arctic vortex collapse and the incredibly, incredibly bitter colds, it's just been hellacious.
It's no comment still whatsoever. Awful. No, it's still awful out. I just came back in from being, you know, out for the night, and about a minute and a half of walking outside was very, very bad for my lungs.
Can't imagine why.
No, it's not like cold air causes things to contract or anything.
Thanks.
That's what I meant.
That. I know. Anyway. For those of you that have been keeping track, over here in the Buffalo area, right now the air temperature is minus 11 Celsius with a wind chill of minus 13. For those of you that don't do real numbers, that's burr. Or as I pointed out to the little one earlier tonight, when we saw that it was 15 Fahrenheit, I told her, yeah, 15 freaking degrees. That's what the F stands for. Freaking degrees. She thought it was about right.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. So, like I was saying, tonight we're going to be discussing logic, and in a very generic methodology. Like I said, I am not well-versed in debate or philosophy. So what I'm going to describe is very, very, very simplistic terms and systems for it all. To give you an idea as to just how much so, what I'm going to be screen sharing right now is a grouping of logical fallacies. Now, on the screen for you guys, it may be a little bit on the small side, but I'm going to really talk about this very quickly. The picture that was built is from a website called yourlogicalfallacyis.com. And what they've got here are some of the most used bad examples of logic, meaning these are the things where people will make the mistake, sometimes knowingly, sometimes accidentally, and these are the things that make a debate or a logical talk, put it that way, fall apart and not work correctly. Because if you're going to talk through logically, you have to have honesty. You have to rely on all of the data, no matter whether it's good or bad, meaning toward good for your side or bad for your side. And you have to make sure that you're dealing with things on an even basis. Because if you tip the scales one way or another, you're not going to get a proper explanation through stuff. And that's, you know, that makes things fall apart, and that's just bad. So some of the biggest ones that are on this that happen very, very frequently, unfortunately. The first one in the list is the straw man fallacy. And for those of you that might understand it, the straw man is making reference to a scarecrow. The idea is that you've got this, somebody has got an argument that they're trying to put forward, their position on an argument. And by argument, I mean discussion. But if you say, okay, let me see if I have your position correctly, and you piece it back together again without all of the right pieces of information, maybe you're leaving out a particular strong spinal piece of it all or whatever, you're basically stuffing together clothing with pieces of straw that will fill out the clothing, but you can easily push over a straw man because it has nothing supporting it. Mm-hmm. But what you're doing is you're actually taking the other person's arguments, their positions, and you are stating it incorrectly, or you're intentionally leaving out pieces, or intentionally putting in pieces that weren't there originally that actually corrupt the argument from within when it's actually not what the people had said in the first place. And that's something that you should not do. If you go ahead and you say, let me make sure that I have your argument correct, don't intentionally corrupt or misrepresent what the other person is saying. If you're going to get through an argument, a debate, a discussion with someone, be honest and upfront. Make sure that if you've said it correctly, you've said it correctly to the best of your ability. And if you've got it wrong, let them say, you know, actually say, do I have that correct so far? And if you don't, let them at least give you the right information. Make sure that they've got it right. And if not, you know, make sure that you're both working from the right pieces. Mm-hmm. Because if you've got it wrong, it's just all kinds of bad. One of the other ones in here that is very easy to explain is the anecdotal fallacy. Basically, if people have a story about something that happened to themselves, or they heard from someone that something happened, and it's actually related some way, germane somehow, to a discussion, to an argument. Somebody saying that their cousin Frank had this happen to their nephew once removed, that's a story. That's not something that is actually studied, that is well understood specifically. It's not something where all possible variables have been accounted for and taken out of the equation to leave just the facts, to use the old trope from the 50s. Just the facts, ma'am. Some of you are old enough to remember that, and congratulations for you for living this long and actually remembering what I'm talking about. And yes, I am drinking coffee out of my Betty Boop mug again. Leave me alone.
I didn't say anything. We can't even see you right now.
That's okay. And finally, again, one of the other pieces that is very much for me is the no true Scotsman fallacy. And this is an easy one to describe, and it's one, again, it comes up on occasion, and it can be really annoying. The no true Scotsman is where you say that a specific group of people would normally do something, but you single out someone who is from that group who did not do that and say, well, they're not a real person of group XYZ. So that's why they did that. The example is, for instance, the example would be a real Pastafarian. I'm going to use that one because I don't want to piss off anybody else. Because I know for well the Pastafarians would not mind this. Actually, I think that they would congratulate me for including them into the whole discussion. A true Pastafarian would never use white sauce on a pizza. They would only use marinara sauce on a pizza because that is what the great flying spaghetti monster and his noodly appendages would want. Well, you know, Jim's a Pastafarian with he's one of those strainer hat wearing dudes. He's been out there. He's got his car all done up with the meatballs on the side and everything. And he goes ahead and he gets white pizza. Well, he's not a true Pastafarian, is he?
Hmm.
And that's what that all comes down to. It's very easy to use that one without really thinking about it. And it's something that unfortunately does come up from time to time, especially for Christians or Jews. And it happens much more often for the Christians because there are at last count over 40,000 different denominations under the overall umbrella heading of Christians.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many, it's not even funny, including amongst others, the Jehovah's Witnesses, aren't they?
Well, that depends on who you ask. Jehovah's Witnesses consider themselves Christians, some don't consider them Christians, and Jehovah's Witnesses don't consider themselves a Christendom. So, kind of depends on who you ask, falls back into the same issue.
See, that's the problem. See, now, a real Jehovah's Witness would consider themselves Christians now, wouldn't they? And therein is the no true Scotsman fallacy. Are they or are they not Christians? Again, it depends on where you go looking in the piece of it all to try and figure it out. Some would say yes, some would say no. And again, under the overall umbrella of Christianity, that gets to be really contentious because some would say yes, some would say no. Some would say that the Jews could do the same thing too. Are they really Jewish or are they not? Is it that someone is actually a Jew because the Jewish lineage follows through the matrial side.
Yes.
If I remember right, isn't it?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. So is somebody a real Jew because they were born of a mother who was born of a mother who was born of a mother who was a Jew? Or are they a Jew because they decided to follow the teachings, maybe get a piece of body hacked off, which is a whole other kind of, I don't even get that. And yeah, so it becomes who really falls into line with all that. Would someone be considered that? because of what they do or what they feel or what they believe, it becomes a big old deal. Now, I've got a question coming through over on Skype for a second, so I'm gonna leave it over to you for a couple of seconds. As far as to logical fallacies or and such, what do you know of any off the top of your head that you happen to like?
Like is a very strong word. I'm particularly fond of spotting the ad hominem attack. And the ad hominem attack is when, instead of going after the person's actual point or position or their argument, it's just too difficult. You know, it's too much of a wall to get over. So instead, if you can't tear down a person's position, you tear down the person and you go after them and you attack them personally and their character, or, well, you're this type of person, or, well, you did that, so that invalidates your entire argument. And you know, it's tearing down the argument by tearing down the person making it and going after the person making the argument. And it's called the ad hominem attack, and it's really, really just not cool.
Very, very much so. Okay. I'm resending the invitation for Dallin and Unrenowned Tech, and we're going to see if we can get them back over in here.
Okay.
Like I said, the technology side of this whole thing is a little on the dicey side still sometimes, so please forgive me. And also, those of you that are on the Hangout page, if you would like to fire through a question, by all means, the Q&A system is up and running. You can always do that. And, of course, if you are watching outside of the time, if you'd like to leave a question or comment on the YouTube page, or send me an email at shujintribble@gmail.com. Again, we'll get around to those the next couple of weeks and such from there. We shall see what happens. Ad hominem, you know, is a really, I forget to switch the video, there we go, is a really a really annoying fallacy to work through, because it's one of those things that works two ways. Yes, you can go ahead and make your opponent look like a complete and utter moron, but at the same time, the person who uses the ad hom attack on someone else's character to try to make them look bad, sooner or later is going to go ahead and make themselves look even worse, because they will come across them. They themselves will come across looking like an absolute ass.
Even in the process of just making the ad hominem attack says something about the person's character. But let's see what our resident Dallin has to say about it. Hello, Dal.
Hello there. I do apologize for that. Unrenowned Tech and I were actually in our own little hangout, thinking we were catching on to the big one here.
Yeah, I have to apologize for that. I'm still trying to figure... apparently, when I send out notices about a hangout, G+, the hangout system, automatically assigns a hangout, but I can't set up the Q&A system that way, which causes a problem, because then I have to set up a secondary hangout in order for that to actually work. So my apologies on that.
Oh, that's okay.
So welcome to it all. What we've gotten through so far is a couple of simpler logical fallacies. I talked briefly about straw man, anecdotal, and the what was the other one? No true Scotsman. That's
yes,
what it was.
Yes.
And which he was just saying that her personal fave was ad hom attacks.
Oh, God, Unrenowned, please stop.
This is what Unrenowned Tech is doing. Hi. Don't worry, we'll get you in here. Don't worry, man. Meantime, Dallin, so first off, welcome to the show. Thank you very much.
You.
Your background growing up comes through from?
Growing up, well, I'm a born and bred Canadian, for those of you that are watching. I will not apologize for that, as some Canadians might expect me to do, or some people.
Got the gold and the silver in the skiing tonight.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
Well,
wow.
If you look at us all, yeah. Anyway, so theologically speaking, your upbringing is...
Okay, theologically, I was baptized in the Lutheran Church. about a month after I was born. Was a goer for a number of years. Was never really as serious, though, as what I see these days. Actually, one thing I do remember most was my mother one time. What was it? It was after we got back home from Sunday. And we were flipping on the TV looking for something to watch, and there was an Oral Roberts show on. And I'm waiting for everybody to do the groan, because that's what's going to happen. But one thing my mom commented right there was that she had no time for him. So that kind of set the tone for me. Is like religion was something you could keep at arm's length and not let it interfere with your normal life. I was married in an Anglican church. How long ago was that now? The post-divorce, I can't even remember. I think it was 11 years. I was married for 11 years. Now divorced, and now definitely coming out of the closet atheist.
Hey.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. And unrenowned tech, since we got you for a couple moments over here, your background is?
Mixed religious background. Mother's side of the family Jewish, father's side of the family Catholic. Had experiences in both. Was basically allowed to think for myself, which I know is a rarity. And after much time, much deliberation, much thought, I realized, yeah, there is no God.
Fair enough. All right, so as far as logical fallacy is concerned, we're just going to go through a couple of these really quickly and then get to what actually qualifies as actual logical work. So, Dallin, did you have a particular one that you knew of that you particularly love to hear people use?
Not really. Sorry, not much to contribute here. There's not too many in my circle of friends that try to come at me from a logical type of logical perspective. So it's more of just learning from other people about what's out there, and then just having a chance to, well, for lack of a better term, to laugh at them.
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay, and Tech, I know that you've got your you've got other responsibilities going on this weekend, so thank you very much for your time. And what would you like to throw on this one as far as to, like I said, a logical fallacy that maybe you specifically know about that you just love?
You mean things that people say that just make you go, what the hell were they thinking?
That's that kind of logical fallacy? Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, every time I hear, and I know it's political, sorry, every time I hear somebody have some kind of problem and then suddenly they blame Obama, and they don't do it in a joking manner that my coworkers do. My coworkers we're constantly joking. The joke is blame Obama, because we use logic where I work, which is rare. But when I hear somebody who actually means it and it's, like, they got a dent in their car door, or they didn't get a discount on something that they felt they deserved, and then they say, it's Obama's fault. What the? I think part of my brain just shut down.
No, makes perfect sense to me. Drives me nuts. And Gavin, we've got full quorum at the moment. Welcome back, man.
Good evening.
Okay. So, really quickly, again, your upbringing background was?
My upbringing and background, I was born and brought up in the Catholic Church, still a member, not necessarily card-carrying, but during college I joined the Dennis Leary lapsed Catholic Church for a few years. and then after I had my fill of that and got out of college, I actually ended up, taking up Catholicism kind of full-time again. And I still I'm still a full-time member, but not necessarily the most committed member of the fan club, as it were. So,
Fair enough. Now, since you had fired over something over in the Q&A system, now that we got you over here, how about I have you go ahead and read it yourself, and I think that I've got an answer for you.
So my question was, and I know that you watched the Nye-Ham debate.
Oh, yes.
I was only able to catch about two-thirds of it because it started when I was at work, and then I watched the rest of it while I was at home. But
okay, by the way, before we go to that a little bit further, for those of you that are unaware about this one, just this past week, Ken Nye, the Ken Bill debate. I intentionally said it the way I intended to this time. The debate between Ken Ham and Bill Nye, the topic was, is creation science a viable, I forget exactly what the wording was, but basically was, is the creationist position a viable scientific system, I guess basically what it comes down to. The archive of the video is available to be found on YouTube. I did download it for myself, so worst case scenario, I can see about that. Although, to be perfectly frank, very likely you can probably find a torrent of it easy enough, but neither here nor there. So, anyway, the question was...
So, the question that I had was whether or not, well, from the Ken Ham and Bill Nye debate, which fallacies did you feel were most prominently used, probably mostly by Ken Ham, honestly, so...
Fair enough. And I went looking through my page over here, and I found it. And this is the one that I'm going with. The appeal to authority, and I'm going to read this off in case it's a little bit too speckly over on the screen for everybody. Using the opinion or position of an authority figure or institution of authority in place of an actual argument. Not able to defend his position that evolution isn't true, Bob says that he knows a scientist who also questions evolution and presumably isn't a primate. Now, in this particular situation, the appeal to authority for Ken Ham was the Bible. As some other people have put it, the goddamned Bible. Time and time again. And we saw this at the... Well, I mean, like you were saying, you caught the tail end of it all. During the Q&A system, the Q&A section of the debate, which was at the end, where people were writing down questions on cards and sending them in, one of the questions that... several of the questions came up where Bill Nye answered it, and then Ken Ham came over, and he's just like... looking over at Bill, and he's just like, well, you know, there's this book that might have the answers that you're talking about. And, you know, he didn't say the Bible, but his inflection was...
You knew he meant it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there was absolutely no question whatsoever. And as a matter of fact, I have something that demonstrates that even better. And this was one of the questions that had come up in the Q&A system. And again, I'm going to read this off because I know that the video capture system may not necessarily be great. The questions had come up. The question that was written down came up as thus. Question: what, if anything, would ever change your mind? On Ken Ham's side, his answer was the following. Quote: well, the answer to that question is, I'm a Christian, and as a Christian, I can't prove it to you, but God has definitely shown me very clearly through his word, and he has shown himself in the person of Jesus Christ, that the Bible is the word of God. Now, before everybody starts snoozing on me, I know, I'm going to speed this along, so forgive me if I kind of ramble through it. I admit that that is where I start from. I can challenge people that you can go and test that. You can make predictions based on that. You can check the prophecies in the Bible. You can check the statements in Genesis. I did a little bit of that tonight. I can't ultimately prove that to you. All I can do is say to someone, look, if the Bible really is what it claims to be, if it really is the word of God, and that's what it claims, then check it out. And the Bible says that if you come to God believing that he is, he will reveal himself to you, and you will know. As Christians, we can say we know, and so as far as the Word of God is concerned, No, no one is ever going to convince me that the Word of God is not true. Which kind of goes along with, like I was saying before, an appeal to authority, to the Bible, to Christianity as meted out by, I don't want to say dictated by, as meted out by a reading of, if I'm not mistaken, the King James Version of the Bible for him. Mm-hmm. Bill Nye, who has a, let's see if I remember, a master's in engineering, I believe it is?
I believe so, yeah, and it's mechanical engineering.
Okay, mechanical engineering. Bill Nye's answer was thus, quote, no, hold on a second, backing up. The question again, what, if anything, would ever change your mind? Bill Nye, quote, we would need just one piece of evidence. We would need the fossil that swam from one layer to another. We would need evidence that the universe is not expanding. We would need evidence that the stars appear to be far away but are not. We would need evidence that rock layers could somehow form in just 4,000 years as opposed to just the extraordinary amount. We would need evidence that somehow you can reset atomic clocks and keep neutrons from becoming protons. Bring on any of those things and you would change me immediately. That is as stated by Bill Nye. In a nutshell, if you want to show me that there is something that takes science and puts it on its head, bring it on, because that's what science wants to do. It wants to be proven wrong. People want to be able to say, we've got something new. Here it is, and here's the stuff that proves it. And as I tweeted at one point, I really, really wish that LeVar Burton had been on at the time live-tweeting it, because I wanted to see just once the hashtag that he uses, which is the acronym for, but you don't need to take my word for it.
You know, there was one piece of the debate that I found very interesting. It was the example that Ken Ham was using about how the dating system wasn't working or wasn't accurate, according to his view.
Caught that too, huh?
No, he's referring to the basaltic lava that had encapsulated the dead tree, and how the tree was, by a certain dating, was about 45,000 years old, and the basalt was allegedly several million years old. I believe those were the numbers. Now, what I found very interesting is I decided to do a little fact-checking on that one just this morning. I found through Google, and I mean, Google is by no means the be-all, end-all of all of this, but I go with what I have. I found three sources for that report. Three. The first one, Answers in Genesis. The other two, I can't remember the names off the top of my head, but they were both tied to Answers in Genesis, which makes me wonder, how credible is this story in truth? Like, where is the rest of the vetting for it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, yes, you've got three sources, but they all seem to be basically three, pardon the craziness here, but three sides of the same coin. If such a thing exists, like we're looking at three facets of the exact same entity.
Yep. Yeah, exactly right. And that's part of the reason why I say at the top of the shows, part of the purpose of this entire vlogcast is the journey through a question to find out what is the meta information of it all. What is the question? Why is the question? How is the question brought? Where is it brought from? Where does the information all stem from? It, like I said, if you've got information that comes from NBC, CNBC, BBC, I mean, you can pretty well guess it's probably, not always, probably a real news story. Now, of course, there are the occasions that slip through the cracks, but, you know, that happens from time to time. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you grab something from The Onion, specifically, you know automatically that it's suspect, and you know full well right away that it's probably going to be, humorous at best.
You'll have to pardon my snickering. I seem to recall a similar show that we usually do on Fridays, where I did bring up an article that I did not properly check, and that was the one about Bill Nye basically exploding and dropping more F-bombs than Joe Pesci over the whole creation thing. And, of course, we found out later that it was actually a load of crap. As wonderful as I would have liked to believe that that had happened, because I think watching Bill Nye go nuclear on something like that would be perfect. Yeah, it's just too bad it was false, and I ended up with a little bit of egg on my face that night, as I recall.
Hey, considering some of the other stories that have been covered.
Well, okay, I mean, what's my specialty? They don't call it the WTF news segment for nothing. You know,
this is true. Okay, Unrenowned Tech, I'm gonna pull you in on this, because we've spent a lot of time so far the evening talking about what does not qualify as logic. So I want to find out from you, and admittedly, I'm going to use what would otherwise be considered a logical fallacy of a leading question, but I'm just trying to get to the right piece over here. When you write a piece of programming, no, better yet, a web page program, and I'm going to call it a program for a specific reason. How do you write it? In what direction do you write it?
Depends what the purpose of it is.
Well, no. If you're actually writing out the code by hand, so to speak, do you start at the bottom and work your way up? Do you start from the top, work your way down? Do you go from left to right? You go right to left? Well, I mean, you're okay. Yeah, you had some Jewish in you, but I don't think that you go right to left.
Typically, if you're going to be writing it out by hand, you're talking top to bottom, left to right.
Okay. There's a reason why I'm specifically saying that. When you write out the code for a web page, and I call it code because if you've never had the opportunity of looking at what web page code looks like, try it sometime in your web browser. See, in all seriousness, there are a number of programs that will allow you to write your own web pages in a very, very generic system. Mm-hmm. There are Microsoft Word does have an HTML export. It is horrific, but still, you can get an idea for it. And the reason why I'm going with this is the best analogy that I have for how logic operates, how it works, is to borrow someone else's expression, and I'm going to break it down a little bit better, a strict procession from cause to effect to additional cause to additional effect. Just like with water flowing downhill, the water needs to go over the lip of whatever it is first before it can run downhill. And logic basically follows the same pathway. You start from whatever your beginning point is, and it flows to whatever the next point is. You don't automatically go from one container to the ground. You go from the container and you tip it over and the water flows out, and whether you see it or not, it has to wind its way through air, molecules of air, who only knows how many, until you finally hit the ground, and then it does whatever it's going to do. It's not going to pool in one spot. It's going to splatter all over the place, and it's going to be messy, and perfectly frank, you don't really want to do that, especially if you've got carpeting. But logic flows in the same method. You can't get from point A to point Z and bypass everything else in the same pathway.
Logic has had, depending on what you're speaking of, logic has shown thanks to human ability of the human mind, the ability to actually make leaps and bounds without being false. It has to do with integration of, in some cases, basically what we call intuition, which is our subconscious making different links between data that we may not be consciously aware of. And so when you see these jumps, you see a gap. But there's actually data there to support that leap. So while you may see, like you were saying, you know, the water has to go over the lip, then it goes through the air, then it runs down whatever it physically connects to, and all that. People have made the logical leap of water runs downhill, but they never saw it hit the air. They never saw it hit the side of the hill. They just saw there's the pool of water. Now it's in the bucket. It went downhill.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there are a lot of times when you do have to kind of follow that backwards in order to try to figure out, you know, how it gets from one to the next. It's to really, really go super simple. You go to a restaurant and you get a kid's menu, and it's got the maze on it. You're supposed to start from the start and go to the finish. And after a while, you know, you kind of learn. You start from the finish and you go back to start, and it's a lot easier to figure your way through for some reason. Sorry, I thought I heard you. But the problem with a lot of what I saw with Ken Ham, and for a lot of creation scientists, and I'm going to use the term, and I'm not going to put any kind of scare quotes on it, because that's what they call themselves. And okay, I don't think it's accurate, but okay, I'll go with that for a moment. But there are many who think that they're following a logical progression when they're doing exactly what Tech was talking about and just jumping over stuff with a leap of faith. And I'm going to kind of go with that one for a second. Which I want to throw you over into this, because you've been kind of absent a little bit for here, and I want to find out if there was anything you wanted to throw in on this one to help it along.
I mean, the thing about the whole thing with logic is that you have to understand how things progress. That if you don't, you can follow a train of thought that sounds like and seems like it's logical to you, but is completely off the rails. That's how you end up getting things like flawed logic. You know, you have people who need to be taught essentially what higher forms of logic are. And if they're not, then it's pretty easy to make jumps in logic and assume it's a perfectly, you know, it's a perfectly reasonable thing, when in reality you're just, you know, logic goes this way and you're off that way somewhere, you know?
Yep. Very much so. I'm sorry, Tech?
I said like the logic gates in Minecraft.
Well, that's actually a really good point. Even the logic gates in anything are a very excellent example. Electronics work in a similar fashion. No matter which analog you're using, whether it's Minecraft or actual analog circuits, or digital circuits, really, the way things are going now, that you follow a specific course with the electrical signals in all of the devices that we use today. And if a certain criteria is met, a signal goes one way. If it isn't, it goes a different way. And there may be multiple paths. There may be nil paths, depending on what's going on. But that kind of thing does happen, and there are rules for how it's all supposed to go. Now, Gav, I'm gonna pull you in again for a second, because I have something that I want to throw at you, and forgive me. I know I'm kind of screwing with you a little bit over here, and it's I apologize.
As our resident Christian, I suppose.
No. Much more along the lines of I really do want your honest feel on this one.
Okay.
And this is a little something from Richard Feynman. And I've seen this one go around occasionally. And for those that don't know, Richard Feynman was not just an incredible researcher, scientist, but he had a wicked sense of humor. And one of the things that he's quoted with is this: if it disagrees with experiments, it's wrong. In that simple statement is the key to science. It doesn't make a difference how beautiful your guess is. It doesn't make any difference how smart you are or who made the guess or what his name is. If it disagrees with experiment, it's wrong. And he, like I said, he was very well known for making pranks on people just because it was funny. But if memory serves, I believe he was the lead scientist researcher on the space shuttle explosion. That was Columbia. I'm pretty sure I remember correctly.
Challenger was the first one.
Challenger. You're right. It was the O-ring failure for. For that,
the one with
I'm sorry.
I forget what the name of the shuttle one, what the name of the shuttle was, but it was the one that was carrying the school teacher that blew up.
It was Challenger.
Yeah. Okay. They did a whole movie about it, about from his point of view, from start to finish.
Oh yeah. Boy.
Okay. Now, what Richard Feynman had done was he talked to the NASA scientists, and they had this big panel, a table with everybody at it, and they were all debating, and they were yelling, and they were screaming, if I'm remembering the story correctly. And what Professor Feynman had was a ring about yay big, of the same material that the O-rings in the boosters were made out of. And the contention was it too cold to launch? Was it not cold enough? And he took it and he dumped it into his glass of ice water and waited a little bit with people finally looking over and like, what in the heck? It's just Richard being Richard, whatever. And a little while later, he took it out with everybody looking at him, finally going, what in the hell is he doing? And he took it in his hand, this piece of rubber that was otherwise soft and squishy, and squeezed it. And it cracked into several pieces, showing his point that, yes, it actually was too damned cold. Thank you very much. Because it was even warmer than what the temperature was at the launch. Now, I say all that because, to borrow somebody else's phrase, I told you that story so I could get to this story. What I wanted to find out was from you, as you say for yourself, as an engineer, mm-hmm. as somebody who can appreciate definitely Professor Feynman's ideals and how he thought through on stuff, from being an engineer in whatever avenue, how important is the logical methodology for putting stuff together, no matter what the medium is? Okay.
I don't think that was on purpose.
Honestly, you could not have timed that one any better. Oh, there he is.
Wow. Son of a... Gavin, did you just rage quit on us?
No,
you
I did not. Gun,
did my, you just rage quit?
My headset took a dump, and I suddenly could hear nothing, and you couldn't hear me, so I had to kill it and restart it. So, my apologies.
No, but honestly, Gavin, the timing could not have been better. And actually, it's a real show now because we've broken Witchy.
That's going on the blooper reel. The best bloopers of... Holy crap!
You going to be all right?
Great.
You know,
all right, so...
This actually puts me in the mind of another... video show co-host, or former co-host. Yeah, exactly the same hand motions, too.
Wow, rules... What is it? If I remember it, it's Rule 63 Jibba, I think is what it is.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so I'm
sorry. So go ahead and ask me your question one more time, because I heard everything up to the question, so...
Okay, so up to the question. The question is, as someone who... you have yourself billed over there with the title of engineer, mm-hmm. and I'm going to take you on that one. Mm-hmm. As an engineer, mm-hmm. I'm sure that you can well appreciate Professor, Doctor, Researcher Feynman, and his methodologies and his love for the method of science and such. Under the title of engineer, how important is following the logical progression through stuff for engineering in any medium?
Critically. I mean, it can be the matter of life and death, literally. I mean, Feynman demonstrate that, you know, as it is with when he did his O-ring demonstration. Now, to be fair, my background is software engineering. However, despite that, when I went through engineering school, I did get exposed to other things. I got exposed to a good chunk of electrical engineering, a little bit of mechanical with some physics involved, even a little bit of astronomy involved in there as well, with a little bit of astrophysics mixed in. So, but the majority of it is software. However, despite that, one of the biggest things that has always been impressed upon us, no matter which of the many branches of engineering you went into, was not so much logic per se, but the ethics behind it. To tell you a story, as it were, one thing you might have noticed is that I wear this ring on my pinky finger of my working hand. I obtained this right when I graduated and got my degree, and it denotes me as a member of what they call the Order of the Engineer, which I don't know all the specific intricate details about it, but my understanding is that the Order of the Engineer spawned out of Canada after they had a significant bridge collapse, kind of on par with Tacoma Narrows, but people got killed. It's actually probably closer to on par with what happened with the Minnesota Minneapolis bridge collapse.
Okay. Before you finish on, for those of you that are unfamiliar for whatever reason, the Tacoma Narrows Bridge is the bridge in Washington, Washington State in the U.S. Very, very famous for the black and white movies of it, literally twisting and swaying in the breeze until it finally literally ripped itself apart and shook apart. It is a classic example of engineering failure at the time because what is now considered a simple piece of nature was overlooked. Mm-hmm. Like I said, now it's considered just a simple piece, but at the time, obviously, they anyway, going on, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. So the original Order of the Engineer, as I said, came out of Canada. And there was a bridge collapse, people died, and they found that the engineers who had designed the bridge and helped build it, essentially, you know, they cut corners and they didn't act ethically. And a lot of the logic to their decisions was absent. As a result, after that happened, what they did is they took the steel from the bridge, they melted it down, and they devised these rings. Now, it goes without saying, this ring is not actually from that steel. But this is where the impetus for it came from. And the idea was that future engineers would get these rings with pieces of that steel as a constant reminder that whenever you do your work in the field, you always, always, always put the safety and security of the public ahead of, you know, stuff like deadlines or budget or what have you. It has to be paramount because if it doesn't, people can die. Now, to get back to the logic portion of it, the logic portion of our decisions as we build, create, devise, design, that's paramount to making sure that you also act with integrity and ethical decisions as you go forth in the engineering process. So, and to be fair, sometimes, you know, you try and experiment with something and it doesn't work. It might not necessarily be that your assumption is wrong. It could be that you're not testing it correctly, so you have to change your experiment. So I do think that Feynman was right when he says that if it doesn't jive with your experiment, it's wrong. But there can be a caveat to that where it may also be that your experiment isn't constructed correctly, and you may have to actually revise and revamp the way that you do your test. But for the most part, I think Feynman was pretty much on track that if you don't have anything that can prove your assumption or your hypothesis or what have you, you either got to change your hypothesis or you have to change the way you test it in an ethical and logical way.
Yeah, which generally speaking, for a lot of researchers, comes down to a simple. Let me finish what I was saying before I cover that up. You need to make sure that you cover the most simple, the most basic problems, and get those out of the equation as much as possible in order to be dealing with just the purest form of whatever question it is that you're working with. Because, like you said, I mean, the old expression is too many cooks spoil the soup, too many variables screw the experiment. And that's why I didn't want to say how it should be simple, because as we found out with the Tacoma Narrows Bridge, man, the simple stuff can just be so easily overlooked, especially the first time out, because of pure ignorance. And I use the term ignorance in its purest sense. You just didn't know. Dallin, I'll throw it over to you. What you might have to throw into all this, too.
Well, actually, the nature of the job I currently do is installing and troubleshooting software now at transit agencies, mostly in the States. Excuse me. And they're, what you were talking about eliminating the simple things first, actually does jive with something that happened to me very early last year. I had come into work and one of our clients was down. And, excuse me, a bit of a frog in my throat here.
Yeah, with the way that the season's been going, nothing's far out of me, no worries.
Tell me about it. Anyways, what ended up happening is I got into work, we had a client, their system was down, and I had one of the support people basically just start rapid firing everything that he figured I needed to do to make this thing work and everything he had done. Basically 15 minutes before I had gotten there, he had completely, like, he went at it from what is the most complex possibility that these people are going through, and proceeded to completely disassemble everything that I had spent 6 months working on. Jesus. And he just kept saying over and over, yeah, I see the face palm there, Henry. Believe me, I've had my goes with this guy once or twice. But yeah, and then he just started rapid firing to me things he was expecting me to do, things that I should have been, that I should be diagnosing. And I just looked at him, I sat down, took one look at the setup. Everything we do is remote. Took one look at it and went, I can have this guy fixed in 5 minutes. And sure enough, 5 minutes later, I had everything running properly. And then I asked, what was your original problem? They told me, and I said, oh, okay. Your problem is X. For problem X, we start with solution Y. If solution Y doesn't work, then we proceed to solution, pardon my Canadianism, Z. And we move, no, like we progress. We have a series of, it's almost like a checklist, like a logical progression.
Yeah, the most common item first, and then work from there to the complexity as opposed to the other way around that the guy was doing. Yeah.
Now, the thing is, like, and the reason I can't fault him too much is because we have had situations where he started way out in left field and worked back two steps and actually found it. So what would have taken the regular progression, say 2 to 3 weeks, he actually had it in a couple of hours. So I can't fault him for that. But at the same time, he got one shot out of 100. Unfortunately, it was a big one, so we still have him around. But
Dallin, yes. It sounds to me like you need to start carrying around a 2x4.
Funny thing you should say that, actually. I don't mean to be hogging the system here, but one of our developers, she left, and she actually bequeathed to me what we now call the office clue by four. Borrowing a phrase from our host here, it is a piece
Don't blame me. I got it from I got it from techcomedy.com. Was that Digital Dog Cow that originally had it?
I don't remember if it was Digital Dog Cow or the site creator grew, but it was one of the two of the old schools that did the clue by four.
Okay.
Yeah, so those of you over at techcomedy.com, thank you. You guys have so much.
Yes, big praise, big praise.
I'm sorry, Tech, one more time?
Oh, I said, if any of those guys are watching this, please keep the archive of Dog Cow's work up.
We'll talk about that more. Going on.
Yeah. But anyways, but she told me about this piece of wood that she had, and I noticed there were a couple of staples on it. And where those came from, she was fighting with her boss about a certain coding algorithm that she was trying to do. He said what she was planning wouldn't work. She insisted it would. And he said, okay, fine. When you finally get it done the way you think you've got it, print it out, staple it to a piece of wood so I can beat you over the head with it. So she went out, she found the piece of wood, she stapled the code segment to it. The guy took one look at it and went, oh my God, she was right. So she
love that.
Yeah, so she and I, we got along. Like one of her pastimes involved kickboxing. So, you know, she can be very aggressive.
Wow. No.
So her and I got along quite well because she was also really witty and everything. We got along great. So when she left, she knew that I had talked about going to my old job, which was a manufacturing plant, and getting a clue by four, actually having one built so I could keep it at my desk. She says, well, now you don't need to. Here it is. And every time somebody does something stupid, we all just kind of glance at where the clue by four is, wondering, who are we going to hit today?
Fortunately, it is not me.
And now that I've completely derailed the conversation.
Well, okay. Actually, still technically on topic, because we are talking about the use of logic, and one of the many uses of logic is that if somebody is acting illogical, you need to set them straight. What's the easiest, quickest way to do it? Restart their brain. Funk.
Or as we say up here in Denort, when in doubt, reboot, eh? That's about the last time you're going to hear that particular quip out of me.
Very much so. Okay, we're getting in on a little over an hour at this point, which is what I've been trying to work towards, and I'm trying to keep cutting down a little bit further. So, S. Ross has chimed in again, and yes, I did get all of your messages, so thank you very much. We're going to take this question because this is going to take a little bit of time to get through, even though it's going to put us a little over time. Assuming that, of course, you know, you guys will still be able to stick it out for about another 10 more minutes or so, right?
Mm-hmm.
No problem, sir.
I'm good.
Okay. All right. So the question that was brought across is the following: when we look at questions like why is there existence, why are there laws of physics, and why is there meaning, shouldn't a logical approach include the philosophical and not just scientific inquiry? Now, I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna start off on this one just a little bit, and Gavin, I'm gonna toss it over to you first after I get my piece over in here, because Witchy, you're gonna be first off, and then I'm gonna bring it over to Gavin.
Okay.
The piece about this that I've got a like I said, part of this show is to go through the course through the questions themselves to find out how much of it is right or, and I'm not going to say wrong, or how much of it is right and how much of it needs polish, I guess is the best way to put it. And please forgive me, I don't mean to be politically correct about it, it's just I'm not quite sure what the right phrase should be for this one. I don't ever want to think that a question is wrong, because I don't think that there are wrong questions. I think there may be poorly worded questions or not properly properly guided questions through through the sea of data, to turn a phrase. So what I've got a problem with this is the piece that says, why is there meaning?
Mm.
And what I've got a problem with that, and we'll cover it all together in a couple of moments, so don't worry about it. But I'm kind of wondering if the question of why is there meaning is even a valid piece to be asking, because I'm not quite sure that meaning is objective, so to speak. Now, I don't know where you want to take on this one before we actually answer it. But was there a piece that you had on that? I mean, the whole thing, not just mine.
You took the words out of my mouth as far as the why is there meaning being a rather subjective question, considering that meaning is subjective. It's individual to each person. As far as looking at questions like why is there existence and why are there laws of physics, if you want to get into the philosophical and get into the under foundation of logic, that's fine. But I feel like a logical approach, see, the problem is you have to start from a starting point. And the philosophical questions are meant to kind of remove that starting point and go back beyond that. So I feel like while I love philosophical discussions, Gavin can tell you I can go on about philosophy for hours and hours, and for him, I absolutely have. He got to listen to me parse out all of my philosophy lessons when I was taking them in college. The problem with going philosophically is that, like I said, the whole purpose of philosophy is to kind of remove that starting point and to kind of delve deep into the rabbit holes, if you'll forgive my use of the phrase. So logic, however, needs to have a foundation. It needs to have a starting point, a given, something that just is. Because if you don't have that, you don't really have anywhere to move from to. You know, you can't really start, you can't build a foundation on quicksand. It's got to be on something solid. And in our case, whether or not, you know, why the reasons why there are laws of physics is not so much important to a logical discussion as the fact that there are laws of physics. And to our knowledge, they are consistent. And that's where we start. You know, that's kind of the point. So I feel like looking at those questions would kind of be counterproductive to logic in the sense that we're discussing it at this moment.
Okay. Gavin, I'll toss it over to you. See what you've got at the moment.
Let me hear your question one more time, because I want to make sure I understand it properly.
Okay, well, the question was posted is, again, when we look at questions like, why is there existence, why are there laws of physics, and why is there meaning, shouldn't a logical approach include the philosophical and not just scientific inquiry? And this one's coming from S. Ross.
Do I think, well, if you ask a scientist that question, they can tell you why gravitation exists. I mean, hell, just, you know what? The easiest answer is just sit down and watch all of Cosmos, because that'll explain a lot of this crap to you already. Is there the possibility that, you know, there was a deity involved in generating those laws? Is it possible? Maybe. I don't know. Even as a Catholic, I can't say one way or the other. I don't think that I'm not someone who necessarily believes that God created the universe in the literal sense like they say in the Bible. I'm someone who kind of tends to follow the more Big Bang theory, and that you have to spread it out over the course of, you know, millions and billions of years. Why do we have existence? Why do we have consciousness? Well, I guess I would say I would use the same answer Bill Nye used in the debate. Don't know. It's one of the greatest mysteries we have. And, you know, I think there's a part of our consciousness, our souls, if you will, if you believe in such things, that wants to know such things. And I think deep down in the hidden nature, it's gradually, and it's not going to happen probably in this century, the next century, or maybe even the next millennium. That's going to be driving us towards eventually finding that answer. May it take, you know, a million years to, or probably more, to kind of come up with some semblance of an answer to that question. I don't know. I mean, I guess I would say there's always the possibility. as a scientist, I almost have to say there is the possibility that there could be God, because we don't know. You know, I suppose the thing of it is there really a way you can test for God? Well, probably not really, at least not that I can think of. But again, we don't know. It's you know, it's just like, why do we have consciousness? Why do we have the laws of physics that we do? I suppose one could say we just do, and that's how it is. But, you know, with all the scientific knowledge that we have accumulated over, you know, the past millennia or so, we kind of have a pretty decent reasoning, I would think, as to why, you know, why do atoms, you know, run in the orbits that they are, with the electrons in the atomic clouds, why do they orbit the way that they do? I mean, I think we kind of have some general idea based on all of our observations, our evidence that we've accumulated over all this time as to why things work the way they do. I know it was very long-winded, so.
No, it's well, it's a very dense question. I mean, there's a lot to it, so I'm not totally surprised. Don't sweat it. I'm Renner Tech. I'll throw it for you if you want to tackle any of this. Shouldn't a logical approach include the philosophical, not just scientific?
Well, part of the question to deal with meaning. And that is an example of why I think that question should not be applied to the crap. I'm at a loss for words all of a sudden. My mental dictionary just crapped out on me. Somebody reboot me quick.
Let me go grab the cool by four.
Control alt delete.
Get your fingers out of my eyes. Anyway, meaning can change. For one person, the meaning of my life has changed throughout key interval periods in my life. And it's going to be different for everybody. So the meaning and logic, meaning get pushed to the side for right now. We're talking about logical statements, facts, things like that. As for philosophy. I've had moments in my life where I felt extremely philosophical, and I realized that the philosophical side of things was the, to me, was the emotional side of everything. If I go and ask a quantum physicist to figure out a problem, and then say, okay, now give me the philosophical point of view. Am I going to, should I expect a really well thought out philosophical point of view of what they just figured out in quantum mechanics or quantum physics? No, they may not be trained in philosophy. It's like the tools that we have. There are people who study philosophy like Witchy. There are people who took some passing courses in it, like yours truly. I got some stuff I touched on a little bit here and there, took what I wanted, left the rest alone. The psychology stuff was more interesting to me. I see it as a set of tools to accomplish a different task. So no, I don't think when we ask our scientists to figure out why does the cathode ray tube get hot and then give me a philosophical discussion on it, I just think that's wrong. Give me the straight, logical, scientific answer, and then let philosophers do the philosophizing of why it got hot.
Okay.
It's like Ken Ham talked about the different means of judging of the tools that we have of judging the age of things. He lumped it all into one big group and said they contradicted each other. Well, yeah, if you try to all use every single method for one single thing, it's not going to work, because there are different methods for designed for different uses.
And if I can kind of borrow a phrase, so to speak, you give somebody a hammer, every problem looks like a nail, which is a piss poor method of trying to find out how cold it is outside.
Exactly. My dwarf in Dungeons and Dragons. He has a hammer named Knock Knock. He hits everything with it.
And it's a piss poor methodology. I hear you. All right. Dallin, throw it over for you on this one and give you the last word on the table.
I remember hearing, I don't know if it's an urban legend or not, about a philosophy exam that had one question on it. I can't remember what the question was, but it was allegedly worth 100% of a person's grade. Everybody but one person failed, although they had written paragraphs, essays, diatribes to try to answer this question.
I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, only one person actually came up with the right answer and was able to pass the course by answering with two words as a counterpoint. Why not?
I believe the question was, why?
Mm-hmm. Fair point.
That question. But his teacher was a little bit more rewarding. If you gave a long, drawn-out answer, if you answered with because, you got a B. If you answered why not, you got an A.
Okay. Now, the reason I bring that up that way is, to me, it just shows that philosophy, yeah, it sounds good, and maybe there is a benefit to it. I'm not hacking on anybody here, but when it comes to science, I would equate philosophy with a spark. It's what asks the first question. So your question is, why do we have consciousness? And at that point, philosophy is pushed aside or put on the shelf, and science takes over to look at what can we do to test for these things. We're slipping into biology, so what chemical processes can we look at? What neurological processes can we look at? All from a scientific point of view, to eventually and to the best of scientific ability answer the philosophical question. But like I said, at least in my view, philosophy provides the spark that ignites the fire of science that eventually allows the scientific method to go through. I consider it the inspiration. A person looks up at the stars and says, okay, what's going on with those stars? Now we use science to find out what it is. So I think from a philosophical standpoint, that is what, like I said, it asks the question that begins the drive. But once it begins the drive, philosophy needs to step back and let science take over until science comes up with a conclusion. That's my point. That's my take on it.
Okay. All right. And I'm sorry, Tech?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just muttering. I said, I think that's the best answer I've heard all night.
Wow. Okay. Let's call it beginner's luck since this is my first time being on the show.
It's appreciated. I'm actually going to go against the grain on this one for with you specifically, Dallin, and I want to kind of tackle this in the only way that I know how, which is to, again, kind of go through the question for myself and try to find out what it is, why it is. And the questions, like I said, the question first off is, why is there meaning? Well, that's actually a piece unto itself. I'm not going to discount that, but I just want to kind of put that into its own bubble for a second. Why is there existence? Why are there laws of physics? Shouldn't a logical approach include the philosophical and not just scientific inquiry? And I'm actually going to take the exact opposite side from you, Dallin, that the philosophical questions are an afterbirth of the scientific system. Because all life. Now I'm going off into a bad area by using that. Let me wipe that a second. Most humans. Let me take that out again. You'll see why in a second. Most conscious entities as we know of them. Let me put it that way. I know it's a very gray and nebulous category that I'm putting there, but there's a reason for it. Let me get through it. Most conscious life as we understand it starts off with not knowing anything except the basics of their own being. And sometimes not even that. Babies born of humans do not know how to see. Hearing has been developing. Sight, for the most part, has been developing but has not been utilized. Hearing has. The sense of touch has been building over time and has always been there as the brain has been forming with very almost nothing in the line of learning technology, which is a very, very, very broad term at the moment, as we get to know it as we grow older. Learning what cold is, for instance, right from birth, because, let's face it, almost 100 degrees inside and suddenly you're in 75 degrees in a very dry environment. That's the first thing that you learn. The world outside of what you were in for most of your formative time is suddenly cold. It's the first thing that you end up learning about. And even that, I don't know of anybody that has enough cognition from birth that they would remember anything like this. And fortunately so. So we learn facts first. We learn what light and dark is. We learn what cold and hot is, wet and dry, soft and smooth and hard, and clothing. And we learn pieces first. And as we gain more knowledge, as we eventually gain consciousness as we understand it through 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, and really start to internalize and become conscious and aware creatures, once you start to get through that formative time, then philosophy starts to go on. Why is that toy not mine? And yeah, it's a scientific question because you're trying to learn new truth, but that toy is mine. Well, no, it's not. Okay, you now have a new truth. Whether you like it or not, you have a new answer. You have a new truth. And we've heard the stories of mine, mine, mine for little kids who have to be told, no, that's not. And after getting over the whole, but it's mine, no, it's not, finally accepting that through whatever tantrum, then the question becomes, why isn't that mine? And that's where philosophy begins. Questioning why is something the way that it is where philosophy really comes into play, versus what is something, how is something, the condition of something, is the scientific question. And asking why is something, to me, is really where the philosophical question is. And it, can they work in concert with each other? Yes. Will one lead the other? I don't think so. I really do think that the scientific question has to come first, because you need to get rid of the ignorance of something before you can ask, why is it? Or, in some cases, why isn't it? So now let me bring this back together again. Looking at the questions, why is there existence? Why are there laws of physics? That's a question of how is something, a condition of something. Why is there meaning? That's now putting on the individual. Do you have meaning? Versus, do you have existence? Well, that's easy enough to prove just by grabbing somebody and smacking them upside the head. You exist. I can touch you. I can feel you. I can hit you In some cases, I can taste you. I don't suggest doing that in public, but the laws say that you should be able to quantify something or someone, even if you can't do it by your own fingers. For instance, IBM writing their logo with individual atoms. You could not see that or touch that or taste that or inhale. Well, you could inhale that. You couldn't smell that, but you have new pieces to help you detect those things. That's science. Is it art? Now you start to get into the philosophical question of, should you do it? What is it? What is the purpose of it? That's one that perhaps philosophy and science can go hand in hand. Should you do something? You can ask the question, but without knowing the what happens next in the logical progression, I don't know that philosophy can really answer the question until you've got the firm ideas, a firm grasp on what will everything be. So, shouldn't a logical approach include the philosophical and not just scientific inquiry? Yes. Yes, it should. As a piece after. Because the philosophical side is what pulls it all together that says, is this a worthwhile endeavor? Will it be helpful? Why would you do it in the first place? So yeah, it can go hand in hand. But it really comes down to a question mark of who's leading the boat? Putting the cart before the horse or the horse before the cart? Sometimes it's really difficult to tell. Sometimes there's a real clear delineation. But I guess that's a piece of the human condition where we really need to try to figure out which one is it. Maybe that's one of the biggest questions of it all, to try and figure it out. I'm going to find that very interesting as we go on. With that ending, as long and as rambling as it might seem, I hope it made a hell of a lot of sense. I'm going to call it a night because an hour and a half, and I'm still working on trying to get these down to an hour. Plus, I'm also trying to remember that I really should not be blinking nearly as often as I have been. I've been watching videos afterwards, and I'm realizing more and more that I... Some people have congratulated me before on some of the personal videos that I had done where they say that you've got a great view, you've got a great presence in video, and they don't realize that people you see on TV or in videos that really look like they're engaging to you, that are really looking at you, you're looking into a camera lens, a little piece of plastic in my case, on a little Logitech ball. So for me, I'm not looking at anybody, but I would like to connect with people by making them feel like they're working with me. And unfortunately, it tries out my contact lenses a lot. But so if my blinking a lot has been distracting for you all, I apologize. But like I said, it's still pretty much a work in progress. So thank you for putting up with what I've been doing as it is.
Well, you're still at you're still within the 5-episode rule. It's an old trick we used to do with podcasting. What we would say is to give the show a chance, give it 5 episodes. If by episode 6 you find yourself liking it, then congratulations, you now have a successful podcast.
Well, with any luck, we'll end up with having several people. For the future, I am hoping that we will have No Illusions from the Scathing Atheist on sometime. I've let him know that he has an open seat whenever he would like to join us, but not Heath, because you know he's an a-hole. But we'll talk about that another time.
But Heath is so close to New York, like it would be nothing. You can invite him over for coffee, living where you do.
See, we're going to talk about the logical fallacy of not knowing what a map looks like later. In the meantime... In the meantime, Witchy, thank you for joining me this evening. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Susan.
Unrenowned Tech, thank you for taking part of your time out. I know it was a little bit of an onus on you, so thank you very much.
No problem.
You look at me, you get some sleep.
Between Dallin and I.
No worries. Gavin, thanks for joining. I appreciate it, as always.
Likewise.
Okay. And Dallin, thank you for breaking a cherry with us this evening. Appreciate it.
It was fun. We got to do this again. I think we broke another one. We broke two. We got Witchy with the double fingers up. Congratulations. Yeah. It's definitely a real show now.
Yes, it is. And for those of you that have been paying attention and watching, of course, either on YouTube or in the Google Hangouts, thank you very much for your time. It's greatly appreciated. As I've said for all these shows, this is not the easiest thing in the world to do. Like I said, I am not trained in any way. I'm not a great thinker. As a matter of fact, my brain has been quite broken for quite a while now. And one of these nights I will actually go into that. If you have comments, suggestions, ideas for future show episode ideas, topics, and questions, please, by all means, feel free to send over some comments in the videos if you would like to catch me over on G+, so you'll get the announcements when the shows are going to be. You can follow me over there under the name Shuchin Tribble. If you are looking to go through the archives over on YouTube, again, under the name Shuchin Tribble. And, surprisingly enough, if you would instead like to email stuff over to me, you can do it under the name shujintribble@gmail.com. Please, in the subject line, do put holy crap. As an aside, one of the notices that I did get was a message over on G+, which was from somebody who had the term Catholic in their username and had wanted to link to me a 2.5-hour debate about, to be perfectly frank, I'm not even sure what it was. However, I did see that it was a YouTube video. It was a debate of some 2.5 hours on some philosophical question or other. And before it even got past the, hello, this is, I stopped it right there because I saw the timing on it, 2.5 hours, and I said, hold on a second. So I sent a message back over to the person to ask, you know, well, I don't really know who you are, and you're asking me to look over a 2.5-hour video on some philosophical debate or other. Why? Well, I just wanted you to understand that, you know, the way and the truth and the light and Jesus and God and because Bible and a couple of things. But it wasn't done in a real a-hole-ish kind of way. And I said, well, you know what? Okay, how about this? I'm going to point you over to the video that I did describing my atheism. It's all of 16 minutes, and inside of the first 5, you'll get the idea as to why I am an atheist. And go through that first, and if you feel that you really want to go ahead and push this question and this thing for me, look that over, ask me a couple of questions on that, and then I'll reconsider investing 2.5 hours worth of time into what it is that you want to show me with this. I have not yet received a reply back. So I'm going to go ahead and put this out there for folks on the idea that maybe you will see it, and I'm sincerely hoping so. I will do my absolute best to tackle all topics, all questions that come my way, even the ones that might be trollish. Because I have no problem with people asking the question and giving them the best answer that I possibly can back. But know this. If you ask a question, or if you put something over to me for the implicit purpose of being a troll, I will not mock you. However, I have no problem with taking the information and putting it back out there for everybody. And I won't necessarily put it out there with all of your contact information because I don't want people to get on your case. But if you do come back to the scene of the crime and you do try to find out, did I get him? Did I get him? Rest assured, if you were trying to be a troll, I will not mock you. But you can pretty well bet any and everyone else on my panel will be more than happy to do it for me. It's good to have friends. And more importantly, it's better to think through whatever it is. If you want to have fun, there are plenty of other places you can go. But if you really want to ask through, by all means, feel free. I have no problem with it.
See, that's why I like Ross's questions, because they seem to be, they come across as educated, well thought out questions with follow up questions, things that make you think, you know, not something that just is trollish. It's actual, real considerations.
Exactly right, and that's the entire purpose of this all. This vlogcast got started partly from the Streisand effect, partly as pure spite out of somebody that I knew back from high school who wanted to tell me, people don't want Facebook this way, take your scary logic elsewhere. You know what? Logic isn't scary. The questions are not scary. The answers may scare you, but that's just because you hadn't thought about them that way before. Until the next time we all get together again, as always, I wish you all the peace I no longer have. I wish you the strength that I've learned. I wish you well. And of course, for my lady, 8.5 years on, hon, I am still in love. Matane Fujin, I love you and I miss you. Dream of me. Our next show is going to be in 1 week. That will put us at 16 February. That will be at midnight, Saturday into Sunday, Eastern Time, U.S. Look forward to seeing you. Until that very next time, everyone, thank you very much for your attention. We'll see you soon. Good night.
You've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google Plus pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.